The views expressed on the following show are not necessarily those of the guest, host, or SaratogaBroadcasting.com. Frankly Speaking is a production of Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated. And now the host of Frankly Speaking, John Frank.
Good afternoon, Saratoga. It's one of the few nice days we've had in the last 3 months or so. I'm Johnny Frank, and this is Frankly Speaking, and I'm here with my cohort and co-host and station manager, Rick Thompson. How are you doing today, Rick?
Good, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, listeners who would like to call in today and speak with our guest, Adam McNeil, can call at area code 518-290-6601. This show and all of our other shows are also podcasted on our website, which is www.saratogabroadcasting.com.
Yep.
And we only have one line, but we're not in the basement. We're at least four floor level here.
That's right.
So kind of moved up a little bit.
We're high on the 13th floor of the John Frank building, our studio. So.
And as an internet radio station, sometimes you'll hear sirens in the background, or our tenant above tends to fall off your chair every once in a while.
Yeah, but that's the sound effects I do here on the board, John.
That's right.
So don't worry about it.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, today's guest is a good friend of mine who I've known for a number of years, Adam McNeil, and just tell you a little bit about Adam. Adam is the principal of True Living Financial. He's a financial advisor, and we'll get into his business in a bit. But before we even do that, I'd just like to say good afternoon, Adam. How are you?
Good afternoon. Very good. Thanks for having me on the show, John.
Just a little history between Adam and I. I first met Adam back in the fall of 2008, I believe, because we were the class of 2009 for leadership. So I think it was the fall of 2008. And we did the Leadership Saratoga program, which we've had a number of members already from Leadership Saratoga. Though we both know the class of 2009 was probably the greatest class of all time over the last 25 years.
Easily, hands down.
And, you know, we first met in a bus, and we ended up becoming good friends.
I think we sat next to each other.
Yes. It was a boys on one side and girls on the other side. It was like when the first time you go to camp when you're eight. My parents couldn't afford to bring me to camp, but I saw it on TV. That's how it tended to work. Are you still involved with leadership? I know you were on the board for a couple of years.
Yeah, I was asked to join the Leadership Saratoga Alumni Association, which you know, helps to keep all the alumni from Leadership Saratoga, you know, in touch with the community. We do a lot of continuing education. We make sure there's enough training to continue the mission of Leadership Saratoga, which is to make sure we're producing quality, informed, knowledgeable board members for the Saratoga County community. So right now I currently sit as vice chair of that board, so I have an officer position there, been on that board since we graduated in 2009. So
right.
It's a group of 26 individuals that are keeping up the mission, many of which were elected from their classes, and now many of which, as we you know, look to transition and change some of the things on the board, many of the people we're bringing back from classes from the 80s, you know, from when Linda Toohey started it way back when. And it's been, you know, refreshing. You get some new voices and faces on the board.
So. One of the members from our class is now leading Ship Saratoga since
that's right.
Linda Toohey retired.
Yeah, Kathleen Fife is now managing the program,
right.
and also sits as a liaison officer on our alumni board.
Right.
And does a considerable amount of work, and without her, I think the program would be somewhat lost. And you know, it's great to see her take over the program and make it her own.
Sure.
And she changed a number of the programs. The finance one, I think she got rid of because that was it's a lot. I mean, you and I know this. It takes years to really understand what's going on and to look at a page full of numbers and, you know, somewhat quickly divine what's going on. It's a little difficult to teach a group of non-financial professionals how to do that in a 4 or 5 hour period.
Right.
So, really, what you find is people looking off into the. It's really difficult to keep their attention.
The two of us were on the edge of our seat during it. I do remember.
Well,
Rick, on the other hand, be snoring in the background.
Yeah, that's right.
And I do remember the day. What's great about not only the program, about teaching people. you know, how to become better and more effective board members is it also, you know, of all the meetings, they're all in different locations, many of which are difficult to find. And that day happened to be up, and it was in Wilton at the Wilton Medical Arts, which is easy to find.
That's
except
correct.
There's two buildings. It was, I think we got 12 inches of snow the night before.
I remember that.
And I walked in late, and let me tell you, you don't want to be late to Leadership Saratoga, especially when...
everybody eyeballed you when you came
in. Yeah, everybody eyeballed you. Linda was definitely, you know, not happy, and that was the first and only time I was... And it was only a few minutes, but let me tell you.
I was always the first one there because I got the best donuts or bagels.
Yes.
You don't get this body shape without working at it, as little as that much exercise. And just a lot of food. Now, part of leadership, and as we get into what you do today, is you end up going on boards, you know, school boards or planning boards or hospital boards, not-for-profit boards.
Yeah.
And not much after you graduated, you are now currently on the zoning board.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about how, you know, who appointed you, how did you get on? Was it because of your name through leadership and things of that nature? And what is a zoning board do? I know what they do because I'm a City Hall rat, but what really does a zoning board do and how did you get on it?
Yes, you know, I believe I started in 2010 on the City of Saratoga Springs Zoning Board of Appeals. I currently sit on the Financial Planning Association of Northeastern New York, and at the time I was just rotating off of being the chair of the Children's Museum at Saratoga here in Saratoga Springs. And so I had a lot going on. I was moving off of the board of the Children's Museum, and I was contacted by Mayor Scott Johnson, who had asked me to join the board. It was interesting. I wasn't really familiar with, you know how my name popped up. And when Scott, you know, called, I missed his call. He left a message. I thought it was actually one of my friends pranking, you know, and it was out of the blue. But they caught me at the right time. I was looking to do more of, you know, some volunteer work that was aiding the community as a whole. I had joined the Lions Club at the time, too, uh-huh. which has a very similar mission. And so when Scott had called and asked if I wanted to join the board, I you know, went to his office, listened a little bit more about it, and it sounded good. What was also nice is the board has staggered 7-year terms,
right?
And I was asked to fill someone's term that it had 2.5 years left. So I knew that you know, going into it, if it was a situation where I didn't enjoy volunteering my time there for the city, that, you know, my tenure was going to be up in 2.5 years and I could move on to something that I enjoyed doing more. But then in January of 2013, that term was up and Scott asked me to sign up for another 7-year or a full 7-year right. Sentence. We joke around. 7 years is a long time,
sure,
you know.
Is.
So it was nice. An interesting anecdote to that was back when I was chair of the Children's Museum at Saratoga, mm-hmm. We were having some financial difficulties. We were looking for some additional revenue to maintain our bottom line. So we had applied for a use variance in front of the zoning board,
okay.
For the city of Saratoga Springs, and
it's different being on that side of the table.
Yeah, you know, so I did have the experience of being on the other side of the table before I, you know, became a board member, which I think is actually important. So you know
sure.
what it's like to go in there, especially not really being familiar with.
Right.
How the board operated. It was really nice at the time. Matt Jones had volunteered pro bono to take on the work for us, which was really helpful, and thank him for that. You know, I remember sitting in the pews, I call them, in the back, and thinking, who in their right mind would want to volunteer? Because our pay is zero, you
right.
know, and just given the process. And then, interestingly enough, I thought when asked to do it a few years later that, you know, I could affect change. I could, you know, make it a less bureaucratic process,
sure,
straightforward
sure.
for applicants, especially ones that aren't familiar with land use law.
Right, and as an applicant, I've been before all the boards before I got into the politics, and
uh-huh.
and you know, a lot of times they have lawyers that are expensive. You're very nervous to go up
yeah.
there and whatever. So,
yeah.
You know, being able to do that and relax people. I know you,
yeah.
the zoning board's more by the book, right? I mean, it's pretty objective versus like a design review that's subjective.
Yeah, yeah, and that's actually I the one thing I really do like about it is that it's much more objective. You know, it's not so much a lot of personal opinion. There's a zoning code. And you know, people are asking for relief from that code,
sure.
And it's a pretty straightforward process. Where, like you said, on the design review commission, or even the planning board, it's a little bit more arbitrary.
Sure.
So the zoning board, it has a little bit more clarity in regards to that. Another thing I do like is, for the most part, when it comes to an area variance, there's three types of applications we'll see: use variances, area variances, and modifications or interpretations. When it comes to an area variance, so that means, to the layman, I'd like to put an addition on the back of my house, and it just happens to be too close to the neighbor's property, so
right.
I need to apply for a side yard setback or a variance from what the town has dictated is an appropriate distance line in
right.
your house.
Right.
For the most part, and I couch that with "for the most part," area variances are applications in which I think the average citizen can apply for themselves.
Sure.
Our city planning staff is amazingly helpful. Our board liaison person is Susan Barden, and I know people that have come in front of our board and asked for help from Susan, and she gives a lot, and she's very helpful to the applicant as far as understanding what the process is, what you need to put on the application, and things like that. So it's less bureaucratic than I think it used to be. I think it's a lot more straightforward for the layman or laywoman to put an application together and come and ask the board for relief from our zoning code. So I think that's good. As far as the use variance, it's a lot more complicated. That'd be if, for example, you're in a residential neighborhood and you want to put a commercial property in there.
Right.
And that's much more complicated. And reality is
that's where you call a Matt Jones.
That's where you want to call, a qualified real estate attorney that does that day in and day out.
Right.
Is that would be my advice anyway.
Sure. Now, because we don't have TV here, Adam always looks a little bit more tired than usual because he has him and his wife Jen have a little one. Just tell us a little bit about your wife, what she does, and the newest arrival and the McNeil clan.
Yeah. Let me tell you, 2013 was a really good year for our family. In September, we had our firstborn, a daughter, Sophie, was born to my wife and I, and it's been just a dream, since she was born. She sleeps well. She smiles a lot. She giggles a lot. Life has been really good to us as far as that addition to our family.
My wife Susie and I stopped by when Jen was about 8 months and 29 days pregnant.
Yeah, came over for dinner.
And brought our two little kids.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, you are one of the lucky ones.
And when we left, they were like,
do I really want to have kids?
What did I do?
It was a little late for us to back out of that one, let me tell you.
Right. We had Johnny Frank Jr. and Matt, he was already jumping on their couch within 5 seconds. I mean, they had a pristine house, and within and I'm sure it's not like that now. There's probably toys all over.
Oh, yeah, toys everywhere. Yeah.
And but
yeah, he was jumping up and down on the couch. It was fun. I had a ball.
Right. Right. Luckily, there was some wine available, so
yeah,
we were relaxed.
There was some wine, a little bit of scotch, and everything was fine. So,
sure.
And then Jen, she lives or she works. She works here in Saratoga as well for Wesley Outpatient Physical Therapy. So,
right, and I'll actually be there tomorrow speaking. They have the Alzheimer Walk.
Oh, nice.
At 1 o'clock, and one of the city representatives, Cliff Van Wagner, had asked us to stop by from the accounts office, and she does physical therapy.
Yeah, she's a physical therapy. She's really good with sports injuries and the like, and has a real talent for it and passion for it. We joke around, or I joke around anyway, so she doesn't think my jokes are funny, but we're a good team as far as occupations, just because I can manage our wealth and our money, and she can manage my health, because let me tell you, I'm hurting myself all the time. I like to run, I like to be active, I like to do a lot of things, and I'm always,
in the heat wraps now.
and she knows how to take care of me. She does a good job, so it's been a good, you know, been good to us. It, what's also nice too is we both live and work in this community.
Sure.
You know, my office is right down on High Rock, right, which is 5-6 blocks from my house, and you know, Jen can also walk to work over at Wesley. So, you know, let me tell you, if it wasn't for Saratoga Springs, I don't think I really would have moved back to the area.
Right.
It's a town where, you know, we were in our mid to late 20s. We could afford a house in the city, yeah, and afford a house where we can, you know, walk and be a part of the community. You know, we've got a front porch that we're always sitting out on warm days, whether we're having dinner or just having some friends over. And, you know, I know my neighbors. You know,
right,
I think because we've got such a close-knit neighborhood and city here, we've got the sidewalks and
right,
and porches. And I really think that allows you to, in any case, in my experience, in my personal view, is it allows you to know your neighbors a little bit better.
Sure. I'm sure you don't walk down the street anywhere in Saratoga where people don't, hey, Adam, how
yeah,
you doing? It's a nice
yeah,
feel. I lived in Clifton Park for yeah, 16 years. It was actually a year, but it felt like 16 years. And they're very nice people, but nobody spoke to anybody. There was no sidewalks.
Yeah.
It was, everybody's head was down when they walked by.
Well, no sidewalks. And it's also easier to, you know, you've got a garage. You've got a
right,
two-car garage, and it's easier just to pull your car right into that garage, close mm-hmm, the door behind you, and walk into the house.
Sure.
And you don't run into these folks. I mean, let me tell you, it was just this morning that my neighbor across the street helped me out. You know, I had accidentally, we had a car in the shop a few days ago, and for whatever reason, I had one of my car keys in my car, and my wife took that car to work. So, you know, I'm sitting there without a car to get, you know, our daughter to daycare and me to the office, and no key to start the car, and, you know, a phone call to the neighbor across the street, you know, saved the day and got me to get the key and car and take care of everything. So,
right,
it's a really great community to live in and work in, and I'm happy to, you know, I don't have that commute down to Albany anymore.
Right.
I'm really lucky and spoiled,
right,
because of that, and don't take that for granted, you know, that you know, I don't spend, you know, an hour to an hour and a half every day in the car. So,
sure,
but that's, you know, what I think a choice people make. I'm lucky enough to, you know, have a business where I could be anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, and still be able to service clients and things like that. So it's
and that's one of the great things about our internet station. We have people from all around the world that either lived here one time or are interested in the horse business,
yeah,
or just love Saratoga Springs. And we get people Thailand all over who listen to the station. Now, you know, we're already a third way through the show. It's so fast it goes. But there's one more thing I'd just like to bring up before we get into the financial planning aspect and,
sure,
and your profession is tell us a little bit about your day with Mary Lou and John Hendrickson last year. Because you said 2013 was a pretty good
yeah,
year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're aware of this, Rick. It's quite a good story.
We moved pretty quickly. And you know, it's a really fun story. And if I'm getting too long in the tooth on it, just, you know, rein me in a little bit. But the other reason why 2013 was such a good year to our family is, you know, like I had mentioned before, first and foremost, because we have a beautiful, healthy, fun daughter at home now. In August of 2013, I was selected as part of the Saratoga 150 promotion. Last year, they did it was the 150th anniversary of running the flat track,
right?
And so they were doing a number of different promotions to get people, you know, reinvigorated in the flat track and what's going on and stuff. And I think really just to have a great party. I think that was the idea.
Right. It's a great year.
Yeah. So
not for me because I was running for election. I was
yeah, it was
outdoors,
a little difficult for you. Yeah.
But I did like the parade. That's the only enjoyment I had.
The Flora Flat.
Yeah.
I hope they do that every
year.
You know, I think it's great. It brings people into the town. And let's just say from a pure economic standpoint, it's definitely a win. But also for a character of this community, I hope they continue that floral fit. Anyways, long story short, maybe about 2 weeks before this race that I was selected, I get a phone call from our past president of the Chamber of Commerce, Joe Dalton, and he says, hey, Adam, just calling to let you know that you've been selected to bet $15,000 of Mary Lou Whitney's money on, you know, next Saturday's race, the four-star Dave.
Okay.
And I didn't even know what he was talking about. You know, I totally forgot that well, you know what it was, is I finally figured it out. You know, when he called, I'm like, Joe, I don't know what you're talking about, but if you're pranking me, I think you need to get to what
you
really
want. He gets pranked quite often,
I guess so, yeah.
Well, if you know Joe Dalton, he's a real character. Yeah, he did a great job for the Chamber of Commerce, and like I said, he's a real character. So I thought he was joking around with me. But long story short, you know, I figured, or after we got off the phone, and I still didn't believe what he was talking about, I went to the website. When all you really needed to do was enter into this contest, was to put your name and phone number in. And I went to the website and I instantly recognized it. So what it was is it was back in January or February. There was an article in the Saratoga. I'm working late one night. It's dark out. It's 8, 9 o'clock. I'm still at the office and I just need to take a break. So I'm going to check the news, check the world news, check the local news, go to the Saratoga, and there's an article about this 150 celebration they're doing and the opportunity for five different folks to be chosen to bet $15,000 on one horse to win. And and all you had to do was go to Saratoga150.com, put in your name and phone number, and that's it. And I said, well, you know,
I can do that.
I can do that. And you know what? I never win anyway, so what the heck? So I put in my name and phone number, forgot all about it until I got the phone call from Joe Dalton. And he says, don't tell anybody because we haven't let the press release out. Right. But you've been selected for this. You got to bet it. You got to bet it all on one horse, and you got to bet on that one horse only to win. You can't couch it. There's no show bet. There's no place bet. You're not dividing up any of this other stuff. So fast forward to a few days later, and I finally can tell some folks that I was selected for this. And the first guy I tell is a guy that rents for me. You know, we rent during track season here in Saratoga. It's very lucrative to rent out our houses during track season. So we have this one renter stayed for a week, and I tell him a story. Now, this is a guy that's been doing in the horse racing industry for about 45, 50 years.
Right.
Ever since he's been a little kid. I don't want to make him sound older than he is, but. I tell him the story. He just starts laughing. I'm like, what are you laughing at? And I don't even know what horses are racing. I've Googled it. I can't find what horses are. He knows what horses are racing. And he stops laughing. He says, you could have been chosen for a better race, for a better day, for a better horse in the entire country in the entire year. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, Wise Dan is running in that race. And he was the Horse of the Year for 2012. He's likely to be Horse of the Year for 2013. And my immediate response was, well, isn't Saratoga Springs the graveyard of champions?
Sure.
And so he's like, no, you don't need to worry about this. I'm like, all right, well, you know horse racing. It always changes it up. That's why, you know.
That's what the trainer secretary has said. Don't worry about a thing.
Yeah, don't worry about
I'm really aging myself because I saw that race as a kid. I was like 10 years old.
But well, Secretariat was part of Wise Dan's line.
Right.
Actually.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Interesting.
So that may probably make you more nervous.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So we're nervous and throughout the week talked to a couple of people that live and breathe and sleep horse racing, and they all say Wise Dan's the horse. That's a bet you got to make. There was another horse that I was worried about. Ended up scratching for 45 minutes before the race. But the day before, I start to panic. Friday, I'm in the office. And I'm sitting like, oh, well, what happens if it loses? I'm like, well, you know what I can do is because I've got this outside $15,000, I can hedge my bets, all right? And me being the financial guy, I figure out that if I spend $7,000 of my own money, I can take my options, which were about, losses. I can come home with zero or win $23,000 given the odds at the time.
Right.
Or I can couch that and bring those, the field goal into either make, at least going home with $8,000.
Yeah.
Or making 16, just based on the numbers that were that were out there for all the number of horses that were there. And I said, well, I called up my wife and I said, listen, I just spent, all these hours doing this. What do you think? She's like, I think you're out of your mind.
So and before you even go any further, there was a race or two before your...
That's right.
Every Saturday?
It was every Saturday.
All right, so you were the second one.
Feature race of every Saturday. We were the second one.
And how did the first person do?
They lost. They bet on the favorite, and they lost.
So that's got to be...
Oh, my God.
It's got to be in your mind, right?
It's killing me. Totally, deflated by my confidence in this, And finally, it builds up to Friday, so I call it. Like I said, she said, you're out of your mind. That's crazy. So I said, all right, I won't do it. Because reality is I'm not a big horse...
Right.
Better to begin with. So I know that it's, when we get to the day, the odds are going to change a lot. I got to add this money here. I got to do this. And I really don't know what I'm doing. So I'm not going to, like I couch my clients or tell my clients, if you don't know what you're doing, you don't do it, or hire, in my case, hire someone to do it. Or with your, tax rate, hire an accountant, that kind of example. But I didn't know what I was doing. So she's like, listen, we're just going to let it ride. So we get to the day and Naira is really generous with us. They give us a table, for food and drink for me and my wife and 8 of our guests. So we bring my parents and her parents and some aunts and uncles, my neighbor across the street, and we'll have a good time. They bring us into the the winner's circle about 45 minutes before the race goes off, and you know, it's getting really exciting, and we're having a good time, and Migliori, he's there interviewing and stuff like that. So, at this point, we finally get introduced to Mary Lou and John Hendrickson, and let me tell you, they were just the nicest, most affable, kind, generous, down you know, earth, fun, right? down-to-earth people you can talk with. Actually, one big thing I took away from of that day was you read the press, whether it's Time Union or Saratogian or whatever it is, and they describe these two as socialites. You know, socialite Mary Lou Whitney was at this event or whatever it is, and I totally disagree with that characterization. I really think they're philanthropists, because during that day, you know, the experience that we were given, as well as afterwards, when you know people saw our name in the newspaper and we were talking about all these, you wouldn't believe how many stories came up about how generous they were with their money and how it was in a generous way that wasn't in the news. You know, it wasn't in the presses. They just walked up to a group of people and said, you know, you guys look like you need some help. We're going to help you out. Yeah. You know, so that was one big takeaway. But anyways, we had a good time. It was really funny. Jen was 8 months pregnant at the time, and, you know, she needed a chair. And so quickly, you know, John Hendrickson beat me to get in a chair and brings it over. And actually, he brought it over for Mary Lou, and Jen was off to the side at the time. She walks back, and Mary Lou insists that Jen sit down on the chair with her. So they're both sharing this chair, you know, and Mary Lou is sitting there next to Jen holding her arm, and I'm like, do not drop this woman, please. But anyways, so we get fast forward. They do the dog and pony show. You know, they ask me what horse I want to bet. All the cameras are on me. I say, number 4, Wise Dan, to win. So they put the $15,000 in, and if that lost, that money goes to Naira. It's not like some special event.
Right.
So horses go off. I think it was a mile and an eighth. No, it was just under a mile. So I think that's 7 furlongs. Yeah. And so they go off. They're running around the corner. One of the things is with this horse, Wise Dan, it's a great, strong horse. The analogy I would give is it's almost like a Major League Baseball player.
Right.
Yeah, but the owner doesn't want to put it in the Major League. He wants to put it in AA or AAA. You know, so it's a huge, strong horse. And the other horses know that, and jockeys know, the only way to win is to box this guy in.
Right.
They tried it week before down south in Kentucky. They try to do it all the time. You know, this horse basically pushes the bushes on the inside out of the way, goes around. So I can see these boxed in again, 3/4 of the way through the race. They're coming around the last corner, and this group breaks off. And I think Wise Dan is in the rear group.
Right.
I have about 6 horses.
So you're not feeling too good.
I'm not feeling good at all. I'm like, oh my God, you know, everyone's screaming, you know, we're having a great time. And I'm like, screaming, and get up there. And I'm like, where is it? Because it gets lost in this pack.
Right.
My wife has to grab my shoulder and point that it's not only it's in the front pack, but it's now just right in front of us, 100 yards before the finish line, broken, separated from the front pack, and it wins by about 2 lengths. And let me tell you, it was such an exciting time. So that was a lot of fun. I actually think John Hendrickson was more excited to win than I was, even though I was the one that won the money. And it was a real trip. You know, at the end, they asked if I wanted the so the odds were that it paid $21,000.
Right.
They asked it, you know, if I wanted it in cash or a check, and I said, thank you very much. I'll have it in a check.
Yeah,
so that's and I need to carry.
And I think I remember the quote in the paper said you're going to use it towards your daughter's.
529 her education savings plan, and we did. What it was left over, you know, after last year's contribution is going to this year's contribution, and there was obviously income taxes that we had to pay on it as well, but. You know, that's a problem we're willing to have.
And sure.
We were just really lucky. It was a lot of fun.
Because I can remember in the paper you said that it was, you know, your daughter wasn't, or your child wasn't born yet, but that was a good start for the education.
Yeah, you know, let that money grow, you know, compound on top of itself for the next 18 to 21 years.
And we'll jump into the financial, but the next few weeks, did anybody else win, or were you the only winner?
So, there was another good story. So, two folks, me and one other person, won. Out of the 5, 2 out of 5 won. I think she won 22-5. I think she bet on the favorite as well, given that payout and the odds. It was a great story. I think the story was she was working two jobs and it was someone that could really use the money.
Oh, that was great.
If I can remember, you and she won back-to-back, and then the other
the last three
lost. I work at the track as security,
Okay.
and I'm right up the press box there. So I look right down in the winner's circle.
Right. Yeah.
And they make a really nice production of it with the three girls,
yeah.
three little girls in
yep.
the white dresses.
The white
they
dresses.
Dress them up.
Yeah.
And they carry out the boxes, and one of them has the money in it.
No.
I don't know which
you don't
one.
Know which one.
You know, it's just kind of cute the way they did it.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh. Their attention to details, but, you know, it was all those, like, aluminum steel attaché cases.
Yeah.
You know,
like
seeing
let's,
them like,
let's make a deal, door number one, two, or three. Again, we're aging ourselves.
Yeah, and they give us that to take home. It's got the big, you know, print on the side, and you'll appreciate this. Sidney, I think, is the head of security there. And he walks
Sid,
really nice guy. He walks up to us. He goes, I'm going to walk you guys to your car. I'm like, oh, we don't need that. No one's going to recognize us. He's like, you've been on the video camera or TV all day.
Yeah.
This is going to be. So we're like, all right, well, you know, we'll take the escort. That's fine. I'm not going to turn it down. He puts us in this golf cart. We round a corner.
People all high-fiving
everyone's
you.
Everyone's going crazy.
Yeah.
You know, they recognize my wife, you know. Beautiful woman, dressed, pregnant.
Yeah.
You can't miss her, you know. And so it was. I was like, I am happy that this man is here and that he is three times the size of everybody else.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's about twice the size of any football player
yeah.
you've ever met.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, Sid's a good guy.
Yeah. So we had a good time. And actually, we had just got back in from our renter leaving. We didn't plan for what would happen for if we won.
Right.
Now, you're the financial planner, didn't plan on what would happen if we won. So we got all these people, you know, that were with us, and we don't have any food in the house because we got no booze in the house.
But
all my
check.
Scotch is boxed up in the basement, you know. So we run down to EBI, we spend, you know, $150 on beer, and we order six pizzas.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, what a good time.
Very
lucky.
Well, Adam, you know, like I said, the show goes pretty quickly, and we're definitely going to have you back. But I want to get a little bit into your the financial planning, and your company, which is over in the High Rock.
That's right.
It's called True Living Financial. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, you know, 4 years ago, I started this firm, just rebranded as True Living Financial in the third quarter of last year. I started the firm in a structure in a way that I didn't see enough was going on in my industry. I really wanted, you know, the way I set up was as a registered investment advisor.
Tell us, what is that exactly?
You know, what that means is basically the long and the short of it are two things. You know, I guess two investors, and that's the important thing. The long and the short of it is one, I can't accept any securities commissions. I don't believe, you know, financial advice should be, you know, served with a conflict of interest that's associated with
sure.
commissionable products. Reality is I don't think clients need those types of commissionable products to be successful anyways. There's plenty of things out there that allow them to be financially successful. And the other thing is that being governed by the SEC as well as state regulators and the structure of a registered investment advisory business, which is surprising to most investors, but because of this structure, I have a fiduciary responsibility to my clients, which means by law I have to act in their best interest. Reality is most people in my industry don't have to act in their clients' best interest. They have a suitability standard that they have to hold to. So while that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone in a registered investment advisory firm is you know, the most honest folks out there, it does provide for the right type of regulatory framework, I think, which is appropriate when approaching and working with you know, individual investors out there. And so I that's why I set that up that way. I think it builds a lot of transparency. My
sure.
clients know exactly how much I charge them, and what they can do with that information is couch that with how well I've advised them, and decide if I'm still the person to do it for.
Now, you have the letters AAMS after your name.
That's
what's that designation?
That's an accredited asset management designation, specific to asset management,
okay.
The College of Financial Planning puts out.
You originally, before you started on your own, what was your background? You worked for different firms, and then
So this is my 11th year in the industry. I worked for a number of firms there, some national, some regional. I still felt like at the time it wasn't, you know, in a lot of different places, it's difficult to make it your own and the message you want to deliver to clients. You know, for example, when I did this rebranding in the third quarter of last year, I named this company True Living Financial. And it wasn't, you know, as a, you know, feel-good kumbaya discussion, let's
right.
go hug a tree. It was because, you know, let's identify what makes you happy. You know, the old adage, You know, money doesn't buy happiness is, I think, both true and false at the same time. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can't just take money and literally buy your happiness. At the same time, you know, from my own personal perspective, if I'm only making, you know, $10,000 a year, I'm not going to be happy in the fact that I won't feel like I can provide properly for my family, put food on the table and things like that. That's right. My own view. I'm not
right.
Judging or saying it's wrong for other folks. So reality is that, you know, money doesn't buy happiness, but, you know, the conversation I think advisors should have with clients is that, you know, the goal is happiness and money is the tool that helps you get there.
Sure.
So it's not the end all be all. You know, I know plenty of people that have a lot of money, and I know many of them to be not very happy at all. Conversely, I know people with a lot of money that are very happy. But it's not a guarantee that just because you've saved a lot you're going to be happy. So the conversation I'm having with clients is, first and foremost, invest in the relationship. What makes you happy? What do you want? And it's a lot of times a gut check. You know, it's a lot of times not just keeping up with the Joneses.
Sure.
For buying that new car, because reality is, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Jones across the street are probably jerks, and then reality is they don't care about you anyways.
Right.
You know, so if your motivation isn't true, you know, to yourselves, that's a conversation that I have with clients too, and to identify, you know, what some of your fears are, what some of your concerns are, and to find ways to invest and save that alleviate some of those concerns. So I thought the best way to do that was in the frame set of True Living Financial. Gets people talking about the right things. You know, if you go to my website, truelivingfinancial.com, you'll see on there that is we added something called the Dream Board. And it has pictures of some of the things that do make my clients happy. So since I put that dream board up there, new clients that come to the firm, they're asked to submit a picture or some type of photographic representation of, you know, their ideal, let's say, retirement. And, you know, that conversation is also, you know, if it is about retirement, you know, I think retirement's oversold in the financial services
sure.
industry in that, you know, not everyone has to retire. You know, I have clients that have retired, and they were bored out of their skulls, and they're back to work. And it's not because they had to go back to work, it's they wanted to go back to work.
Yeah, it keeps them healthier and younger in many instances.
Absolutely. And, you know, people also forget, and I have to remind my clients, your social network is largely, you know, through your work.
Sure.
You know, whether it's you got a friend at the building next door and you go to lunch 3 days a week, or it's the people you work with you happen to like to work with. And if you're retired, twiddling your thumbs at home,
right.
you're not seeing them that often anymore,
right.
you know?
Right.
So, you know, I know a lot of people that just get bored. So the conversation I have, again, you know, back to the True Living thought process, is don't retire from something, retire to something.
Sure.
And that, if that's golf 5 days a week, that's fine.
Right.
If that's, you know, I have clients that are running nonprofits. I have, you know, clients that are volunteering at hospitals and all over the place. So, you know, these were all discussions before they retired. And the ultimate thing, you know, if we do get into more discussion about financial planning, whether it's today's show or another time, is, you know, when I understand my clients', you know, interests, I can help them to identify how much they're going to spend in retirement. And let me tell you, that's one of the most important things. Of understanding, you know, a successful retirement so you don't run out of money is what type of retirement do you want it to be? Build in some flexibility to that plan and then come up with a retirement income stream that you can afford it. And when I, you know, have invested in that relationship first with my client, I can better gauge how much they're going to spend and have
sure.
that conversation. And then, you know, they're more apt to be successful in retirement. You know, I can't guarantee everything. I can't guarantee inflation is going to stay low. I can't guarantee that the market's going to continue to grow. But, you know, some things we can work with a good amount of flexibility that's necessary to do a successful financial plan. We can get people.
Right. And, I mean, to step back for a second, you know, where they said money doesn't buy happiness. You know, mm-hmm. there's always the old saying, the former lead singer of Van Halen says, they asked him if money, you know, bought happiness, and he said, no, but when I'm depressed on my big yacht, I feel a little bit better. So, you know, and I saw Bill Clinton years ago. He said, I've been rich and I've been poor.
Yeah.
I prefer rich.
Right.
So,
exactly.
But no, it doesn't buy happiness, but it does. It's a vehicle to allow you to do things that, you
that
know.
That does make you happy.
Right.
And everyone's situation and
sure.
definition of happiness is different, you know.
So you briefly mentioned earlier, where's your office located in Saratoga Springs?
So it's on High Rock Avenue and the same side of the street as the farmer's market that's on Wednesdays and
sure.
Saturdays.
Okay, and that was the old, like, Van Ralph factory.
Yeah, Van Ralph
when
factory.
I was a kid.
Yeah.
Probably somebody in your family or wife's family worked there. They worked
probably there. Probably when they were growing up.
Yeah.
I think in the early 90s, Sonny Bonaccio, Tom Ruin fixed up that building. It used to be derelict. They did a site plan remediation. They got rid of a lot of asbestos and stuff in the building. And let me tell you, I've been in a few office buildings in Saratoga Springs. It's the one I love the most. Clients can find it. Clients can find parking.
Which is
you know, there's
and it's great. Every office is different.
Every office is different. Times. Yeah. You know, and I just lucked out, you know, the timing that I managed to get a corner office. So it's, you know, there's a lot of natural light and sun. I can put some good plants and stuff in there.
Had a nice restaurant down there, too, that
Corner
Cafe was there.
A few years ago. They were there. There's a parking lot between there, and now there's
a church.
And then on the facing side to my building is like a Feral Fitness, like some type of fitness and a couple other things.
Again, I will not be at the fitness spot, or maybe the church either, based on my history. But
but it is a nice building.
Yeah. I just love that clients can find it in my office. It's very professional looking, and it works.
And the best way to get hold to you, I mean, other than referral sources, would be through the True Financial website, or what's your phone number?
TrueFinancial.com. People can find my contact information. My office number is 518-364-7899, and they'll get me directly there. The website's got all the address and email address information. People can find me. Even if they have any questions, they can give me a call. There's also some other great information to be found on that website. Just started a blog post. It's just kind of talks about what we've briefly been talking about today, as well as a white paper that I just written and put up there in regards to intergenerational wealth planning and, you know, how to properly transition assets to clients. And it's not just a discussion about you know, how to do that with estate planning documents. It's also the personal side.
Sure.
Again, the conversations I like to have with clients. You know, if I were to rename it, it really should be called How to Not Leave a Mess Behind.
Right.
Okay. But, you know, I can't tell you how many, you know, family strife, you know, situations I've seen just because mom and dad didn't identify the fact that, you know, one child wanted, you know, this set of china or the other child want this personal item.
Sure.
So it even goes down, you know, list your personal items, have a conversation with your children, you know, beforehand. I can't tell you how important communication is.
Sure.
And the advice I give clients is, you know, depending on your relationship with your children, that communication can be had while you're still alive or it can be had after you leave, depending on the documents that you leave for your kids. And I'm talking about things that you can write outside of your will. And, you know, what items you'd like to see. You know, that white paper that's on there even lists what documents you should have to make the life on your executor or executrix a lot easier. Who's ever administering your estate, it has, you know, things like what you should have as far as accounts, account numbers, where it's held. You know, it starts off with who's your advisors, you know? Who is your tax advisor? Who's your legal advisor? Who's your investment professional? And who's your insurance professional? So that, you know, for example, when you're probating an estate, if you're still paying, you know, the property and casualty insurance on the automobiles and the house, and make sure that still gets paid out of the checking account that you have, and how much, you know, you owe and things like that. I've actually started a new practice with brand new clients that want this level of service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the second part of the document is discussing where to store these documents.
Sure.
Okay, and some people want to put it in a safe deposit box. I strongly advise against that. What I'm doing for new clients that want this level of service and is buying them a fireproof box, putting my card right on the inside of it.
Right.
And so that when, you know, the worst thing actually happens, the person that's going to look at that box that needs help, you know, assessing those documents and what to do, can give me a call and I can walk them through it. That's the service that I provide.
I think that's really important because being an accountant and going through this, you know, there's no particular order, but husbands tend to die before wives, like 79% of the time. So, and a lot of times, it's not as much now because women are really into the financial planning where, you know, in my parents' day, that wasn't the case. But a lot of times the husband, you know, may have done all the financial planning, done the will, and the wife in that instance has no idea what's going on.
That's right.
And
it's the worst situation when it happens, you know, at the very least. I see that a lot. It's very generational. And a lot of the discussion is 2 points. You know, one, you know, we need to take the spouse that's not knowledgeable about finances and bring them into the conversation. Sure. If not just for the annual meetings, maybe not the right. quarterly meetings. Because just understand, we've put this document together that outlines all your assets. This is what you know, how your assets are doing and why we've got them in the way. So just have a basic understanding. Cause, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, one of those, you know, those spouses aren't dying together.
Sure.
One's going to die before the other. In this scenario we're talking about here, you know, most times it was the male figure that managed the finances. Just so happens that, you know, men aren't as strong as women, and they're dying earlier, you know.
Sometimes on purpose.
Sometimes on purpose. I'm a broken heart.
Can't take it anymore.
Yeah. And then, you know, what do you have left here is a surviving spouse that might not really know what to do. And... you know, one of the actually is interesting. I didn't think of this. It's amazing what things some clients can bring to the table. Is had a couple hire me about a year ago, and the interesting they said is not only do we like what we see, but there's another reason we're hiring you. We're hiring you because you're 34 years old.
Right.
And the reason being is I'm going to die soon, and I want my spouse to make sure that at a time when she doesn't have a lot of knowledge about financial, we don't want you to be retiring.
Right.
So we vetted, you know, you and a couple other advisors were going to hire you, and I thought that was, you know, an interesting thing is, you know, I'm going to be around, you know, God willing, and I'm going to be around and doing this business for another 34 years.
No, I think that's important for two reasons. One you brought up. And also, in Saratoga Springs especially, you have a lot of young, upcoming professionals mm-hmm. with Global Foundries, with Saratoga Springs.
Yeah.
A lot of people who are doing very well, maybe working out of Albany, living in Saratoga County.
Yeah.
I can remember when I was in my mid-30s, I used to hear the same thing. Now they're like, do you have an associate's a little bit younger? You're like, yeah.
John, but, tell me about your transition plan.
That's right. One of the things I wanted to ask you, and John made a point, do you find that baby boomers are more receptive to planning for the, you know, the time when they pass away, have everything lined up, where the older generation, like my parents or, you know, a little bit older, weren't that familiar?
Yeah.
Where
I actually find that's something that the baby boomer generation is severely lacking as far as the planning.
Really?
Well, the reality is, you know, when you're 65 years old, you're still kind of young in my
yeah.
book.
Oh, know? Yeah.
So when you're 65 years old, you're not thinking about dying. You're thinking about if you are retired, about, you know, where you want to, you know, go on vacation, where you want to visit your kids because they've moved across the country, things like that. You know, if there's one thing we all know is we're all going to die. You mm-hmm. know, so...
I'm just hoping everybody else here goes first.
Yeah.
But whereas I found, yeah. you know, I've got, it's funny, given the type of work, I call it intergenerational wealth planning. It sounds a little pretentious, but that's the only way I can best describe it, is I'll have clients that are in their 80s, and eventually over time, their children become clients,
mm-hmm.
or vice versa. I'm doing a great job for those baby boomers, and they say, you know, you need to have a conversation with my parents. I don't care if you bring me in on it, okay? But you need to have these conversations because I fear that this mess is going to be left behind for me and my siblings. And maybe there's a sibling rivalry. Maybe they don't care, but it's still going to be a mess, and no one knows where the accounts are. I mean, perfect sure. example is, you know, a life insurance contract. That insurance company is under no obligation to pay out that contract if they don't know you're dead.
Right.
And if you don't know the contract actually exists, how are they going to pay out?
Exactly.
And if it's a term policy and it runs out, I mean – so there's a lot of things that are that
and
you,
even
you got to put down.
Right. The beneficiary exactly. is important, and yeah. Because I know a lot of instances where, you know, people get divorced
mm-hmm.
and they had their ex-spouse on the
yeah.
and that's outside of the will.
Yeah.
And so their ex-wives or ex-husbands
yeah.
and, you know, and the current spouse has no idea because they just didn't change it because they didn't do financial planning. What I also, based on your question, Rick, what I find a lot is maybe not Adam because he's younger, but our parents were had that depression mentality,
yeah.
so they saved everything. They didn't
right.
buy things on credit.
Yeah.
Where the baby boomers just, you know, and I don't know how it is, Generation X, Y, Z after us, but
right.
but so I kind of agree with what you're saying, Adam. That yeah. probably of all of them, they've done the best, but they're also the worst. They also grew. You know, when I was a senior or when I was a freshman in Siena College in 1981, the big talk was they hoped by the year 2000. That the Dow Jones hit 1,000. It was only 900, 800.
Sure.
So, and it had been like that since, you know, the 60s. And I can remember one of Mr. Ira Smolowitz was my teacher in finance, and he tried to get me out of accounting. He says, "You want to go in the stock market? I make so much money." I'm like, "Whatever." You just think I'm a bad accounting student. If I had listened to Ira, like four or five of my drinking buddies did back then, they're all living in the Hamptons right now, and I'm in the back room here. It's kind of dark, but
it's a nice building.
But it is a nice building. And he bet that it would hit 10,000 by the year 2000, not 1,000.
Yeah.
And his whole thing was the baby boomers, and where were they going to put their money? And they and there was going to be all this, and he was right, a very, very smart gentleman.
Yeah, and baby boomers on the whole have been good savers. But as far as this subsection of planning, I think it's really missed. That's why I'm focusing on it. I think people need to get in on it. If not, just go to my website and download this white paper just to get an idea of where to start. You know, bring in your attorneys and your legal counsel and get it done. But yeah, I would really like to see the baby boomer generation do a lot more of it. I don't feel like it's done enough, but I did find, and I do find from my experiences that, those, you know, the, what we call the greatest generation, they do a pretty good job of getting their stuff in order. If not anything else, they typically don't have, you know, 15 different accounts all over the place. Sure. Like I find a lot more, you know, people do when they get younger. You know, you got old 401ks, you've got accounts you set up at a mutual fund company here, or whatever it is. Greatest generation, they were a lot more just keep money in the bank. So they had about, you know, a bunch of CDs and things like that.
Sure.
Maybe one brokerage account and a bunch of savings accounts and treasuries.
What I'd like to do, and have you back, obviously, we have about 6 minutes. Like time goes fast. Goes pretty quickly.
We got a good 10 minutes.
Okay, we have about 10 minutes. Yeah. So
did I answer your question?
Yeah, definitely.
What we like to do, Adam, and you know, maybe over the next few months, is have you come back, and we'll go over like specific things, whether it be financial planning and wealth management, the intergenerational wealth and estate planning,
go a little deeper,
college education planning. Like, just have shows on that
sure.
in the future. To if you're willing, if we can find you and you're willing to come back, retirement, your various goals. What I kind of want to jump to. Just because we had it's left, and like each one of those could be a show in and of themselves.
Probably, yeah.
Is,
and one of the other things, Jen, that I'd like him to talk about is Saratoga County is one of the fastest growing counties in the state of seniors. So we have a lot of seniors move in from downstate and that. And I'd like to know, I know you had mentioned you're young and they like that, you know, because they know that you're going to outlive them.
Yeah.
And maybe you can go into that a little bit more about how, you know, the elderly that are moving in here are looking to, what they're looking to do as far as investing or planning for their future. They probably have already done that where they're from, but I'm sure they switch over when they come up here.
Yeah, I find a lot of them not only switch because I've got a number of clients that have fit the mold of what you were just talking about, lived downstate, moved up here, closer to family, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they typically do switch because their biggest asset almost all the time was the house that they owned. You know, for example, you know, my grandparents, when they bought Nassau County in Long Island, I think in the 30s, they bought the house for $14,500. They sold it for many, many, many times that.
Oh yeah.
You know, so a lot of times, you know, with folks that are moving up here, whether it's from Long Island or any of the counties north of the city, or even from the city, their biggest asset is now sitting in cash because they just sold it.
Right.
Okay. And what is an appropriate way to invest that? You know, it used to be great pre-2008, early 2007, and, you know, before interest rates just totally bottomed out. You know, I could find, you know, CDs for clients at different banks. And that's, you know, what I do. I don't need to have all the assets with me. I, you know, will sometimes source for clients, you know, different banks. And so I'll look at, you know, 5-7 different banks and say, all right, you know, let's see. I could find, you know, a 3-year CD for 5.5%.
Yeah.
You know, I could find online money market account nearly as liquid as it comes. You know, sometimes you can only take out 4 or 5 times a month,
right.
But as liquid as it comes, you know, for 4.5%. Right now, this morning, I was looking at it for my own personal stuff, but I also recommend clients go there, even though it's one of my competitors. Capital One Bank has a money market account for 0.75%.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really challenging right now creating that not only income for clients. typically have fairly good income in the realm you're talking about now as far as pensions and Social Security. But as far as any ancillary income generated from their investments, right now it's a real challenge, because one of the things I really focus on is risk. Okay, everyone's always talking about returns, and let me tell you, returns are really important. Okay, yeah. Gives you a metric by which you can measure the success or failure of your advisors. But reality is, without returns per unit of risk, it's kind of like going on a trip and saying the trip is 5 hours away, but we're not going to talk about how long it's going to take there to get there. Meaning, you want the miles per hour
to equal out.
To really equal out and say, all right, did we get there in a reasonable amount of time, or did it take us 6 months to get to Buffalo? So it's per unit of risk. It's how much risk you take and get that return. You can, I've seen some accounts where advisors are taking crazy amounts of risk, and while that feels really good, in the up years, let me tell you, when those bad years come, and they will come, you get burned.
So probably the first thing you'll do when a client comes in, whether they're young, elderly, whatever. Age comes into play, obviously, but also their aversion to risk. I said, Rick and I, we're in the same age group, but at the same time, he's at the track. He might like to bet the horses. He has high risk.
Sure.
I'm an accountant. I'm so conservative. I may actually be losing money because inflation. If you stick all your money into a money market, obviously, it's probably less than inflation, and you're dead. You're actually losing money.
Exactly.
So is that the – and I will, like I said, we'll be getting in these other categories of future shows. Yeah. But is that pretty much the first thing that you do?
It is the first thing. For example, actually, the blog post, you can read more about this. I wrote specifically about what you're talking about. Right. And it was, I had a client that owns a business, was amazingly successful, didn't grow up with a lot of money. And because of that, there was a paralysis that surrounded making any decisions. And what that paralysis did for this individual was mean they missed out on a lot of earnings growth that they could have. Okay, and I'm not, the advisor says, you got to take more risk. It really is couched with what you want to do. But it's a lot of information, and one of the things people need to know, maybe if you're not taking market risk because you're not fully invested or partially invested in the stock market, let's talk about inflation risk. Because if you're, got all the money stuffed under the mattress or just in a money market account that's not beating inflation or even coming close to it, inflation is going to whittle down that asset such that you won't be able to, possibly maintain your standard of living.
Right.
So, over a 20-year period, it's amazing, how much more, things get expensive. It's an easy Google search to see, how much a gallon of milk was or a gallon of gas was in 1980 or 1990, 20, 30 years ago. But those numbers are there. Go look. You'll be staggered. Add 30 years for the rest of your retirement, and then you can get a picture of, wow, I do need to get some type of return on this. It doesn't mean you have to be in risky or all stocks. But nowadays, the investment science really dictates that even if you're a very conservative individual, you should have 5 to 10% of your portfolio in stocks to help over time outpace that inflation. You take some of the winnings off the stock, you put it back in your fixed income and savings, investments, and you create a much more successful investment plan.
The old saying is, and we have about a couple minutes left, so we'll begin towards the end here, but the old saying is it's never too early to invest, but is it ever too late to invest?
Well, that's a good question I've never had before. Is it ever too late to invest?
My reasoning for that is, obviously, if I was smart when I was working at the track when I was 16, selling ice cream cones, I would put 25% put an IRA and all those various things. But let's say somebody's in their 60s and still working, and you're telling, I think you make a lot of sense. A lot of people will work until their 80s or 90s if they can. So probably you're better doing something than nothing, even if you get in your 50s or 60s trying to maximize whatever you can do.
Because
pension plans have kind of disappeared.
Yeah. Our companies aren't taking care of us like they used to. And you see it as far as workers aren't having the same loyalty. So it works both ways.
Right.
But is it ever too late to invest? I don't think so. Because, what you've missed out on as far as growth opportunities of 30 years of compounding returns on that investment – it still means, you know, you still save some money that will help you to augment any other income sources that you have. So is it ever too late? I don't think so. Just one thing I always want people to remember is whether it's by choice or not, at some point you will be unable to work. You will not be working.
Right.
You know, one big, I think, failure people do and kind of goes into the intergenerational wealth planning that we're talking about here is just planning for when your health changes, because sure, it's going to happen, whether it's slowly or quickly.
And that's where insurance comes in many issues.
Well, you can do it insurance. That question is all about transferring risk, whether it's some type of long-term care insurance product or some type of trust work or self-insuring. You know, that's a conversation.
Where you're leveraging small dollars for
exactly.
There's a cost associated.
Yeah, there's a cost associated with any of these things, right, and a risk associated with them too. So it's a question of how much risk you want to take, what kind of cost you want to take, self-insure, buy some insurance, transfer that risk to an insurance company. Those options are out there. It's just you need to have an informed, unbiased discussion.
Sure. The hardest thing to do is to make someone realize they're not invincible.
Sure.
Couldn't agree more.
Right.
Well, that's great. We're coming towards the end of the show.
Whether you're 20 or 80.
Right.
You know?
Well, I'm feeling that my knee hurts right now. So. But the that would be great. I mean, what we'd like to have you back, and Rick also has a show down at Skidmore.
Yeah, and if any of your readers or listeners want anything specific, just call in.
Sure. Yeah, I was thinking about business. We have a lot of small business in the city.
Sure.
Talking about buy-sell agreements, business insurance,
yeah,
retirement planning, many of the things that are currently on your website at trueliving.com. I really appreciate you coming in, Adam, on short notice, and we'd love to have him back.
Thanks for having me.
We're very lucky in Saratoga Springs. Every guest we have is fantastic.
That's right. Adam, yeah, great guy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Glad to meet you.
Thanks, Adam.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll be back tomorrow with Talk of the Town with Cheryl Paulson, our guest, who's a direct marketer. And Saturday we have a person from Homemade Theater in the Spa Park on our Talk Saratoga show, 8 to 9 on Skidmore Radio. And then next Tuesday, Frankly Speaking, we'll be back.
Right, and for next Thursday, and Frankly Speaking, we have Carrie Warner, who's currently running in the Assembly District, and she had come very close in the last election.
Yeah, and I had her first on Talk Saratoga.
You've tend to beat me on a lot of things, so that's that's not a lot of competition.
She's a great, great lady.
She's
a good guest.
And again, this has been podcasted,
and
because we're just starting up here over the last few weeks, and after doing beta shows last year, and so you can get this online
this afternoon.
So you can go right on there, and we can also work to download on your website.
Adam. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Great.
No problem.
Have a nice day.
Thanks.
Have a great.